This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Brady Henderson from ESPN.com. And so it's what an amazing turnaround this team is. It's looked like it's, started off bad at 0-2. They've now, come back and won four out of the last five. And they've at least they got a personality they have identified on this team. What have you liked of what you've seen so far?
You know, I think, John, this is going to be kind of a general answer, but it's really, I think they're really playing the way that Pete Carroll prefers his entire team to play, which is, an offense centered around a really physical running game with a quarterback that is not making mistakes. And, for all if anybody who thinks that Russell Wilson, because he's only throwing the ball 25 times a game, is being marginalized, look, he's on pace for a career high in touchdowns. So they're getting really efficient play from their quarterback. They're taking the ball away on defense. They're second in the league right now with a plus 10 turnover margin. That's as good as they've done, I think, since 2014. I think it's pretty impressive what they've done on defense with so many of the big names that they lost. And a lot of people, I think, because of that, because they lost five Pro Bowlers on defense over the offseason, I think that led to an assumption that this was going to be a rebuilding year for the Seahawks. And, John Schneider said it wasn't. Pete Carroll said it wasn't. I think Schneider's term was a little bit of a reset, and whatever you want to call it, the moves that they made this offseason, they're paying off. Guys, young guys are developing, and because of that, they're very much in the thick of the NFC playoff race right now.
Yeah, no question. And they held up well in their first game against quarterback. They had the 5-game stretch against franchise quarterbacks. How do you think it's going to shake out now with Phillip Rivers followed by Jared Goff?
Yeah, it definitely gets tougher right now. And actually, you could say that going back to last week. You could say that quarterback gauntlet really started last week with Matthew Stafford. It's Stafford, now it's Rivers. Next week it's Jared Goff, who's becoming a really good quarterback. And then you've got Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton. So that is a very brutal 5-game stretch. And I mentioned that secondary with so many young pieces in there. I think we're going to find out a lot about how good that group is, because even what they've done to this point, I don't think anybody would have expected that if you would have told them that you're going to start a rookie fifth-round pick, a guy who converted from safety at right cornerback, and then after the third or fourth game, whatever it was, you're going to have a second-year guy in Tedrick Thompson who's never started a game in his NFL career. So to this point, that group has held up, I think, better than anybody could have expected. And we're going to see, we're going to find out more about them. And, if that group can be, and look, that group does not need to be compared, to the Legion of Boom. And we don't need to say, can that group be as good? Because I don't know if any group will ever be as good as the Legion of Boom. But if that group can be, a big time secondary, just think of this, how much that might turn around the Seahawks' fortunes. You start talking about a window that is going to be it's going to be open a lot longer. If you've got a group like that, a defense like that, that can, finish in the top five in scoring defense every year, you start talking about there's a lot of possibilities there. So it's certainly a long ways from happening. But the early returns right now, I think, are pretty encouraging.
Oh, no question about it. I think the fun part of the last five games or so has been really watching the offensive line come together, because I don't think anybody expected this. I mean, DJ Fluker, of course, is ironic now, comes in this game, the Charger team that let him go early, and he's going to be playing with extra strength against them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, guys talk about him as, he's already the guy who brings the juice in the huddle, and, the guy who, I think Russell Wilson had a comment the other day that he said he doesn't think anybody loves football as much as DJ Fluker. And we hear a lot of times about just that attitude that he brings. So, yeah, you certainly expect him to be even more fired up against, the Chargers team that drafted him, that let him go. But, that offensive line is something that has probably caught a lot of people by surprise, just because people are used to seeing that group struggle. And, the games that the Seahawks won, over the last few years, I think a lot of that was in spite of their offensive line. And now you're seeing them win games with very much the help of their offensive line. And, it's been a pretty remarkable turnaround. Now, you could have expected some improvement from that group, just because there's a new coach, Mike Solari. Dwayne Brown He was not healthy last year. He only played half the season, and he sprained his ankle pretty badly, I think, in his second game. So anybody who was paying attention, I think, could have expected improvement from that group, but it may be more improvement than anticipated, just because this run of games that they've had where they're rushing for over 150 yards, we have not seen that group hum like that since 2015. And as the ESPN's pass blocking win rate metric shows, they're one of the better pass blocking teams in the NFL, which is not something that you would have said about a Tom Cable offensive line.
What do you think it was? I mean, how much goes on Tom Cable on this?
Yeah, that's a good question, John, and I wish I had. I don't know. I do think some of it, though. And you just look. So this is. There's three guys. It's not like a brand new offensive line. I mentioned Dwayne Brown, and he was not healthy last year, so you've got to attribute some of that to that. But this is Justin Britt. This is Jermaine Ifedi. I think Ifedi may be one of that may be kind of the best indicator, just because you had 2 years under Tom Cable, and he was, he led the league in penalties last season, and he did not seem to trust his quickness, and he seemed kind of slow-footed at times, and that was, I think, a part of the reason for some of those penalties, is that he was, he was jumping early because he felt like he needed to get a head start on those edge rushers. And you're seeing a better Jermaine Ifedi this year, and maybe that would have happened just in a guy's third year, that's just part of the natural development. But it does make me wonder if Mike Solari has quite a bit to do with that, just the fact that he's putting it together in year three right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's a thing that's been remarkable. Now, they got an interesting several decisions to make, because you have to think some extensions have to start coming due. What do you do with your two guards? Because J.R. Sweezy has been very effective. You still have Ethan Posick now on the bench. Dwayne Brown's already signed, and you're pretty well taken care of at the tackle position, and also Justin Britt. But what do you do with both guards?
You know what? I wonder if that might be a situation that they let that play out for the rest of the year. And part of the reason I say that is, there was not a huge market for DJ Fluker this past offseason. I mean, the Seahawks got him for $1.5 million, I believe it was. I think they got J.R. Sweezy for about the same contract, and he had been, sitting on the free agent market for a little bit after the Buccaneers released him. So I don't know if I think that may be something where they can let play out, because, again, you mentioned they've got Ethan Posick in there. That was a guy that they sort of drafted to be a starter. You draft a guy in the second round, you draft him to be a starter. So I don't know if, certainly those guys have, they've certainly, shown that they are worthy of consideration for being around here for a lot longer, but I don't know if there's going to be the sense of urgency to get a deal done in a way that there might be with, another position where, if they feel like if that guy got the free agency, that would be it, because it would just be impossible to re-sign him. I don't know if they would feel the same way about those guys, just because of what we saw from their market this past offseason.
Yeah, no doubt. What guy do you think will get a contract, or do you think that they may have to wait to the offseason to get some things done?
Well, I was thinking about this recently, and we've only really seen them do, as far as those really big budget extensions, we've really only seen a couple of those happen during the season, and you have to go all the way back to 2014. When it was KJ Wright and Cliff Avril, and you tell me if I'm forgetting anybody there, John, but those are the only two guys, and Michael Bennett too, a couple of years ago, and that was in December, so over the final few weeks of the season. One guy that comes to mind right now is Justin Coleman, just because he's playing in the final year of his rookie contract. That's incorrect. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. I think he was playing on a restricted free agent tender this year is what it was. But he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He's only 25 years old. He's played, pretty well in the slot. He's had some tackling issues that people have probably noticed. But aside from that, he had the big interception last week against Matthew Stafford. He has really played some pretty good football in the slot. And, that may be one guy, just because, they've got other free agents, but you'd be talking about a third contract for KJ Wright. I think they definitely want to see how this season plays out for him, coming off his knee injury, the surgery, plus he had to have Regenikine last offseason. So I would think that with KJ Wright, they would want to let this season play out and see how he is. But Justin Coleman, as far as young guys looking for that big second contract, he is one guy that comes to mind.
No,
and obviously Frank Clark. We've talked about Frank Clark before.
Yeah. But it does look like Frank Clark's probably going to be heading for the franchise tag next year.
Yes, I would agree with that, and I think that his side expects that to happen right now. And I talked to his agent a few weeks ago, Eric Burkhart, and the main takeaway there was that they're not in a hurry to do a deal right now. They're not in a hurry to do a deal that, and this is my own number I'm throwing out here, not a number that he threw out, but I don't think they're in a hurry to do something like, Danielle Hunter did with the Vikings this past offseason when he took a deal, I think, for about $15.5 million instead of waiting, seeing what he could have gotten in free agency. Well, he's right among the league leaders in sacks right now, so if he would have waited out, you're probably talking about a deal closer to whatever that franchise tag number is going to be, which is $17, $18 million. So I really don't think that Frank Clark's side is in a hurry to do a deal right now and then potentially miss out on a lot bigger payday than what it could be in free agency. Of course, the Seahawks have the franchise tag at their disposal, and so I think that's what it's going to come down to. If Clark's side doesn't want to take a deal right now, they're gonna let it play out, and the Seahawks, of course, they cannot let him get to free agency, because that would once those pass rushers get to free agency, it would be a hard time. The Seahawks would have a hard time, I think, bringing him back, just because the price tag would escalate, because now all of a sudden you're talking about a bunch of teams bidding. So the franchise tag, as soon as his agent came out and said that they're not in a hurry to take a deal right now, it has seemed like the franchise tag is going to be the most likely option, just because it doesn't sound like that $17, $18 million a year deal is on the table right now. And I think the Seahawks, in order to keep Clark in the fold, at least for next season, they're going to have to franchise him.
No doubt. Brady, thank you for joining us as always. See you tomorrow.
You bet, John. Thanks. See you.
That's Brady Henderson, ESPN.com. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Chris in Everett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing very well. Hey, I'm glad the Seahawks are doing well. I got a very good question for you. This could be, I like to see the Rams and, what do you think about this? My question is for you here, is can it be the Rams and the New England Patriots to go in the 2019 Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. That could happen, sure. Because okay, I think that, even though Kansas City has a better record, New England beat Kansas City. And so if Kansas City catches up, and of course, we'll have another game coming up here with Kansas City taking on the Rams here in another week, is going to be fascinating. But I think that right now can happen, because say what you want about New England, they may not be that good on defense, but somehow, some way, they always tend to get home field advantage.
Oh, yeah. But in a way, I'm a, was that quarterback's name for the Rams?
Jared Goff.
Okay, so see, like me, I was born in Long Beach, California, so I'm a golf fan. I'm a really a golf fan. Plus, I'm a Seahawks fan, a 49ers fan too. So,
right.
So I know he's a very good quarterback for the Rams. So now take your pick here, John. Okay, if the Rams versus the Patriots in the Super Bowl, who do you think who might win that Super Bowl?
I would lean toward the Patriots probably because of experience. But then you saw last year, if you have a kind of a funky offense like the Rams have, Bill Belichick benches a cornerback that he probably shouldn't have benched. I mean, you do have hope. So, the game's going to be indoors in Atlanta, of course, so there's no elements or anything like that. But I'd still say the Patriots, because, again, it's hard to bet against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Do you think the Seahawks might go to a Super Bowl in the next couple of years from now?
I could see it, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it, because, again, it's a team right now that's changed everything around. They're better than I think people have expected them to be. This isn't a Super Bowl team right now, but I think you're seeing the beginnings of a core group that is pretty good. And, of course, as long as you have the quarterback, which they have, good things usually happen.
Yeah. And another thing, John, I'm glad the Seahawks just brought back the old school What's his name? Ken Norton Jr. And what's that guy's name, John? The other
Brian
guy,
Mike Solari, yeah. Mike Solari has done such a great job with the offensive line, and I think Schottenheimer has done a good job with the offense.
Yeah, man, they're doing very well. I mean, do you think the Seahawks, do you think they should have gone, 7-0?
No. I don't think – because remember, this is still a turnaround, right? And
right,
it takes time. And so, I think that they should have gone 1-1, but they didn't have DJ Fluker in the first game. They didn't have the commitment to run like they do now. Now things – they've developed that personality, which has been very solid.
Hmm. Do you know how many points they're favored for tomorrow's game?
I think 1 point. I mean, it goes between pick 'em and 1 point.
Oh, it's 1 point? Oh, that's crazy.
That's all it is. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, no problem, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here. We're here to the top of the hour. Give you a few college scoreboard updates. Texas leading Auburn 24-14. It's Ole Miss 30, South Carolina 27, Wisconsin beating Rutgers 24-3. These are all fourth quarter scores. Michigan State 17, Maryland 3. In the third quarter, it's Oklahoma leading Baylor 17-14. Iowa State over Kansas 27-3. Clemson blowing out Louisville. That's 49-3. Syracuse over Wake Forest 28-10. Nebraska upsetting Ohio State in the third quarter, 21-17. Ohio State is 10th ranked in the country. Army over Air Force, 14-6. It's Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan tied at 7. That's in the third quarter. Georgia Tech is beating North Carolina, 28-17. It's Wyoming just starting off against San Jose, and they lead 3-0. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Nathan. Hey, Nathan, how are you?
John, good morning, sir. I'm going to change gears here a little bit and want to talk about a little Mariner baseball.
Okay.
Earlier you had Curtis Rogers on, and he just kind of flashed over Chris Herrmann, our backup catcher, got released, which is it's inconsequential. However, we do this every single year. We love and we trust Mike Zunino, but he is so below the Mendoza line every year that we have to have some kind of backup catcher. And Chris Herrmann, as with all the other guys we've had year in and year out, actually kind of do the job, but Zunino is our star defensive all-star caliber kind of catcher.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to have somebody that can hit the ball. And why is it that the Mariners just can't just rely on one guy, that 22nd guy on the roster, to be a good stable backup? Just like you do in football, you have to have a good backup quarterback. Why can't we keep a decent catcher? And catchers are not available in free agency. They are so valuable. So mm-hmm. Why can't we keep one?
Good question. Because again, but I think that's a league-wide problem. I mean, you know, it's such a position of need, and there doesn't seem to be, you know, more than because again, you're talking about past 30 guys, and that. But you're right about that. It's always a rotation of so many different people that they've had at the backup catcher position, and of course, they want to make sure that they get things going right with Zunino, and his hitting just continues to be the thing that pulls him down. I mean, he had one good stretch at the end of last year, but no, that is a concern. There's no question. Okay, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Commando Dave. Hey, David, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, John Clayton, because it's always good being on with the professor, especially a week nine Seahawks home game against the Chargers when Seahawks Stadium should be supercharged for the first game at home since the passing of owner Paul Allen. Before I bring it to the show, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of the 11 lost souls in your hometown of Pittsburgh, a terrible tragedy for your Steel City, John Clayton.
Yeah, well, it was just horrible. I mean, seeing that last week, and it was just a horrible, horrible thing. Awful.
Yeah, exactly. And closer to home, rest in peace to Nick Marigi, who passed suddenly this week, former owner of the sports page in Auburn and big-time Seattle sports fan. And John Clayton, big-time Seattle sports fans like Nick look forward to big-time games. And as you said in the show opener, this is a weekend of big-time football. The only time I ever met JB in Renton, he was decked out in so much black and gold, it was ridiculous. So today, for that big Alabama-LSU game, he's going to probably be wearing a Tiger costume left over from Halloween. But when I think about Death Valley, John Clayton, I'm reminded of Chavez Ravine, where my Dodgers dropped the World Series to the Boston Red Sox 4-1 in 6 games since game 3 was a doubleheader. And to paraphrase Jimmy Malone from the Untouchables, they send 9 of yours to the offseason, you send one of theirs to the morgue. So Whitey Bulger, roast in hell. And
you remember what a story that was, how he got
I know.
Man.
Wow. Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Right. Exactly, man. Look, speaking of roasting, though, Husky fans expected the California Bears to be roasted to a nice golden brown at 470 degrees last week in Berkeley. But to paraphrase Bill Belichick, we're on to Stanford. And I know there's going to be a big pack of dog fans at Cooper's Ale House in Lake City since they have the Pac-12 network. Otherwise, I'd have to fight my way through the biggest den of cougars in Seattle at Fitzgerald's and Ballard since WSU Cal kicks off about halftime at a Husky game. Go Bears. Did you get a chance to review that Cal Husky game, John Clayton?
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
what was your take on why the Dogs couldn't get in the end zone?
I think what it comes down to is that first off, I mean, Jake Browning did not have a good game. Secondly, I think you can see the wear and tear on the injuries have played on the offense. Maybe you can say to a small degree a little bit of play calling, but I think in the end it was just the craziness that was going on with the Cal's defense did some good things, and then the offense just has not been clicking. I mean, this has not been the best scoring Washington offense overall. But again, when you're left tackles out, you're missing your receiver, your running back's hurt. I mean, you pay a price for that.
Yeah. So I heard someone say on radio, made an excellent point this week, that with Miles Gaskin out, it's kind of like having Greg Lewis out, and there's just not another Greg Lewis on the team, put it that way. Moving to the Seahawks, John Clayton, as we've talked before, this is a 12-man season, a season the Hawks must reestablish the dominance of home field advantage unmatched in the NFL, and tomorrow should be a Sunday like we've never seen before. Not only is this a big game, this is the Paul Allen game. It will be a somber Sunday when the 12th man flag goes up, knowing that it won't be raised by Paul Allen the next time the Seahawks host an NFL title game. It will be a jubilant Sunday, thinking about the future of the Seattle Seahawks based on the foundation of the past, thanks to the best owner in Seattle sports history. And for my money, it should be a blowout Sunday to underscore what Paul Allen meant, not only to the Seahawks, but to the city of Seattle. John Clayton, I don't care what the line is, what the injury report says, how strong Phillips Rivers' arm is. I don't care about the Chargers winning 4 straight. The Seahawks cannot and will not lose this game. This Sunday will be a Sunday unlike any other Sunday ever in Seattle football history. Go Seahawks, Hawk and Roll, go Huskies, be Dogs. Talk to you, John Clayton.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Larry in Yakima. Hey, Larry.
Hey, John. Hey, Seahawks running game has been really quick in, as everybody knows, for the last 5 weeks or so.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think the credit is maybe going to the wrong place.
Where do you think it should go?
That's a little bit. It's hard to for a guy just to watch TV and see break down how the offensive line is doing. You got five guys to look at there, unless you really study film. It's hard to look at. So, I know you reference Pro Football Focus a lot, and if you look at the offensive line individually, Fluker and Effetti and Sweezy rank very, very low in their positions. They rank mid-60s out of about 75 qualifying players at their position. And Chris Carson is amongst the league leaders in yards after contact. I believe he's going about 1.5 yards on average per carry before he gets hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, those rankings for, like you said, for Fluker and Effetti and Sweezy, they're not good. They're not good at all. So I just don't understand.
Yeah, but it's
the
funny because, you look at the it's what they got. I know Fluker's been getting good ratings on Pro Football Focus.
Well, if you can go look at him right now. He ranks about 60, right around 60th to 65th overall and in run blocking.
Mm-hmm.
So I know he gets a pancake now and then. I don't think Pro Football Focus gives extra points for pancake blocks. They just grade whether it was a successful block or not. I just think Chris Carson is where the credit goes. And I'm not hearing hardly any praise of Chris Carson, just a little bit, but it's just like Fluker. I don't know. If you break down the numbers, it's not Fluker. It's Carson who's making a lot of yards after contact.
Carson has been great. There's no question about it. And I think he is getting recognition around the league because his ability to break tackles, his ability to keep forging forward has been remarkable. But let's put it this way. I mean, everything has to work well to get the running game going, not just a running back. Now, we saw Marshawn Lynch. I mean, he may have taken the line and make it look better than it was with his ability to run. But I think in the end, what you're looking at is a pretty good system right now. And the big thing is, I mean, this is only five games into it. I mean, this stuff wasn't there before.
Well, yeah, that's true, but I'm just looking at where the credit goes, and I just think it's Carson way more than the offensive line.
Well, but let's put it this way: I mean, did Mike Davis? Can Chris Carson take credit for the success of Mike Davis?
Well, last time I saw the yards per carry after contact, Mike Davis was also top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the running back.
You can look at the analytics, but also look at with your eye. I mean, have you noticed that the pocket has been clean for Russell now for about 5 weeks? I mean,
their pass blocking grades are actually pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Fluker and I'm not sure if it was Effetti. A couple of those linemen had pass blocking grades in the 70s.
Right.
But their run blocking grades are in the 40s.
Yeah, well.
With 50 being average. And here's the thing about Pro Football Focus. You mention them when you want to mention them when they've got a high rating for a Seahawk, but they grade every player on the same criteria. It may not be accurate on every single play, but over the course of a season, they're grading apples to apples for every player in the league. So, I mean, they're comparing them. You can get a good comparison to where every other player at their position is at. I'm just looking at the numbers. Like I say, I can't look at a football game and try to grade five linemen all at once and see if individually they're playing well or not. I don't have the skill
right.
or the knowledge. But that's what I'm looking at.
I don't think I can, for 5 weeks and for the first time in 3 years, I don't think that you can be too down on the offensive line. It's done a good job. And again, they're winning because of the blocking of the line, the running, and of course the defense came out better than people thought. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Well, yep. Mm-hmm.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show and for running the show. Give us a call here, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as we head toward the bigger games of college football that are going to be coming up here very soon. It's going to be a lot of fun to kind of get those games on. And, you know, again, you got Michigan going against Penn State. That's going to be huge. Then you've got the big game with LSU going against Alabama. That's going to be a monster. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. This certainly is the best weekend. I mean, the best Sunday or Saturday, I think you can say, of the college football season. And, of course, you got Washington State with the big game coming up against Cal. Let's go to Ron in Vancouver. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good. How are you?
Talk to you.
I'm talking to you.
Great up here. I wanted to know your outlook for the AFC wildcard teams. What you think might happen?
Right now, I would lean toward thinking, let's see, for the AFC wildcards, there's not going to be any coming out of the AFC South. I would have to think Cincinnati right now is poised to have a pretty good chance of making it. And I think the Chargers right now have a good chance of making it. So we'll see how the Bengals can hold up. I mean, they've done much, much better on offense than I think anybody anticipated. That's one of the encouraging things. And so I would go at this moment, because, again, you look in the East, there's nothing there. I mean, Miami is not going to make it. I mean, they give up more points than they score than the South. I mean, you know, it's right now Tennessee hasn't stepped up yet. So, I mean, and maybe I don't know if Cincinnati can hold on, but I'd say right now it's Cincinnati and without question the Chargers.
Yeah, you mentioned Tennessee and with this Mariota deal and the disappointment, a bit of a disappointment. You don't think they can push for one? It's just an off season for them.
Well, they're just not getting anything done on offense. And
yeah,
you know, with Marcus, it's interesting because I still like Marcus Mariota. I'll tell you, the guy's really been a bust. Is Derek Harvey, the running back.
Yeah.
Or there's Henry. I mean, Henry's been such a disappointment. And I know this week he finally addressed it and he says, hey, I got to pick this game up. I've got to do some things because it's just not getting done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, great talking to you, John.
Hey, thank you very much, Ron. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Derrick Henry has just been, you know, because remember, they knocked DeMarco Murray out of there and thinking that Henry was going to pick up, but now it's just been more Deion Lewis than anything else, and they're just not getting very much production at all out of that running game. And so without the running, and I think you see it here, if you don't get the running game going, then bad things tend to happen to your offense. I know it's a passing league. It's a league right now that is quarterback driven, but I think you can see, you know, both in Carolina, in Washington with Adrian Peterson, I mean, you get running. I mean, what was it last year? Nine of the top 11 teams or 10 of the top 12? Nine teams in the top 10 of rushing made the playoffs. And so you definitely need to run the football. You need that balance, because if you put everything on the quarterback, usually it's going to be a little bit tougher. It's going to be one where, you know, you're going to have bad things happen. So in the end, I think it's, you know, try to make sure that you get some good things going with the running game. And that's what Seattle's doing. DJ Fluker, I think, again, has been such a revelation, along with J.R. Sweezy. And again, you just watch the film of some of the stuff they're doing. They're just having a blast. They're really getting some good things going with that run game. So, you know, stay tuned on that front. And, of course, stay tuned on the other front here, because, again, we got the big football game tomorrow with the Chargers coming up against the Seahawks. That's going to be a lot of fun, and one where we'll see how this all goes, because, again, it's a fun season right now with the fact that they're kind of back into it. Again, they can't lapse. They can't try to be overconfident, because if so, then some bad things are going to happen. But overall, I think right now you're looking at a team that's very confident in what they're doing. They've established their personality. But you go back, about 3-4 weeks ago, I mean, they were starting to establish it, but you didn't know what they were going to be. Now I think there's a little bit more certainty on what's going to be there. So stay tuned tomorrow for the game with the Chargers coming up against the Seahawks. I'll be back on Monday at 10 o'clock. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.